Iran says Israel is the biggest threat to West Asia and all Muslims calling for stronger Islamic unity in support of the Palestinian people. The UN chief calls for a three-day ceasefire in Sudan on the occasion of Eid al-Fitr as intense fighting continues in the African country. Also coming up, Moscow strongly condemns Washington's foreign policy, saying the only method the US uses in its international relations is blackmail, threats, and sanctions. Thank you for joining us. Our top story this hour, Iran's foreign minister says the apartheid Zionist regime is the biggest threat to the West Asia region and the entire Muslim Ummah. Hossein Emi Abdullahian was speaking on the phone with his Jordanian counterpart Ayman Safadi on the eve of Eid al-Fitr. The Iranian top diplomat also stressed the necessity of stronger unity among Muslims to stop Zionists' aggression against the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound and help Palestinians restore their full rights. The Jordanian minister said his country will continue to support peace and stability in the region and defend the holy sites in occupied Al-Quds in the face of the Zionists' aggression. Amir Abdullahian also talked to his Saudi counterpart, Faisal bin Farhan, on the phone. He expressed hope that Tehran and Riyadh would reopen their diplomatic missions on each other's soil before this year's Hajj pilgrimage. Farhan, for his part, said Riyadh will provide Iran with necessary facilities to reopen its diplomatic missions in Riyadh and Jeddah. Iran's President Ibrahim Raisi says Muslim nations should collectively act against Israeli atrocities in occupied Palestine. Raisi made the remarks in a phone call with the Emir of Qatar, Tamim bin Hamad Al-Thani. He said expanding ties with neighbors is a priority for Iran, adding that regional advancement is possible through cooperation and strengthening bilateral relations. For his part, Al-Thani condemned Israeli regime's crimes and reiterated Qatar's support for Palestinians. Al-Thani also expressed Qatar's readiness to expand bilateral ties with Iran in all fields. Both leaders exchanged congratulations for Eid al-Fitr that marks the end of the holy month of Ramadan and is celebrated by Muslims across the world. In recent years, Iran has made great headways in manufacturing a broad range of indigenous military equipment, particularly drones. Now, the Iranian Defense Ministry has delivered 200 drones to the different divisions of the army. Our correspondent Mehdi Abbasian reports.
Iran's defense ministry has made mass delivery of new combat and reconnaissance drones to Iran's army in a ceremony attended by Defense Minister Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Gharayi Ashtiani, as well as the commanders of different divisions of the Iranian army. With the goal of increasing the power of the drone fleet of the Islamic Republic of Iran's army, 200 new indigenously built drones were delivered to the ground force, the navy, the air force, and the air defense force. Minister of Defense and Armed Forces Logistics of Iran hailed the country's advances in drone production, saying that the Islamic Republic's defense doctrine is entirely based on deterrence.
The more powerful the Islamic Republic's deterrent power, the better it can help countries that seek security and stability in the region. Certainly, Iran can help them because its military prowess has contributed to providing peace and stability in the region, and the drones that were delivered to the armed forces today are part of the country's defensive power. This trend will continue.
Iranian experts have made giant strides in boosting defense power by producing various equipment, including different types of drones. Iran's drone program has become a significant deterrent in the region due to the country's ability to conduct combat and reconnaissance missions using these UAVs. Also, Iran's army commander, Major General Abdurrahim Mousavi, highlighted the growing power of the drones used by army units.
With different ranges, sizes, and weights, these drones can perform all kinds of missions for the Islamic Republic of Iran's army. The experience of using drones in new battlefields has shown that they have a significant and decisive effect. This enables the Iranian army to have the upper hand in the battlefield.
The Navy will have a drone range of 2,000 kilometers with the addition of these drones to its fleet. This means that our operational radius will increase significantly. And in addition, due to capabilities of the drones, we can stalk and hunt subsurface targets such as submarines.
The ground forces of the Islamic Republic of Iran's army itself is a manufacturer of UAVs. We built drones in different scales, from large to small, that can have strategic effects on the battlefield. In general, drones are a unique and effective weapon and can improve our country's combat power.
There has been very good cooperation with the Defense Ministry. We do appreciate all their efforts. These are operational drones that will definitely be effective in improving the operational power of the Air Force. We plan to use UAVs and planes with a single central command to engage targets.
The delivery of 200 new drones to the Army is part of an agreement with the Defense Ministry on the promotion of drone power and the equipment carried by the unmanned military aircraft. Last year, the Iranian Defense Ministry and the Army signed a strategic agreement. On their phase one of the agreement, the Defense Ministry has undertaken to equip the Army with 1,000 drones.
The United Nations has called for an immediate ceasefire in Sudan as intense fighting continues in the African country. Guterres said the cessation of hostilities must be followed by serious dialogue allowing for the successful transition starting with the appointment of a civilian government. Leader of the Rapid Support Forces, General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, has welcomed the proposed ceasefire. Syria's army, Army Chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, for his part, said he would support a truce on condition that the RSF would allow citizens to move freely. Burhan also rejected the idea of having direct negotiations with the paramilitary group. Explosions and gunfire were heard around Khartoum International Airport, the army headquarters, and the neighboring cities of Omdurman and Bahari, as rival forces battled for a sixth day. Over 300 people have been killed so far. The fighting broke out on Saturday after weeks of tensions over the planned integration of the paramilitary group into the regular army. The Israeli regime has approved plans to build nearly 3,000 new settler units in the occupied West Bank. Media reports say the regime also plans to build 240 units in an ongoing settlement project north of occupied Al-Quds. Israel has already allocated large sums of money to build roads and infrastructure in the settlement areas. According to Israeli media, new projects aim to connect existing West Bank settlements and attract new settlers. Meanwhile, the Palestinian Foreign Ministry slammed the Israeli plan, calling it an imperial move, and says it amounts to a declaration of war. Israel has stepped up its settlement expansion since the formation of a new far-right cabinet under Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. That's in defiance of international outcry and UN Security Council resolutions. All Israeli settlements are illegal under international law and the Fourth Geneva Convention. Earlier, Professor of Political Science at Berzit University, Saad Nimr, joined us with his take on Israel's new plan to build more settler units in the occupied West Bank.
We are talking about two issues here. The one issue is the reaction of the international community. So far, the international community is condemning and say this is illegal, but in reality, they don't do anything practical. They don't take measures against Israel to punish them for violating the international law regarding the settlements. And hence, then the Israeli, who are supported totally by the Americans, who said nothing about these settlements, definitely they are to go ahead with multiply these settlements and building new units and enlarging existing settlements and turning the outpost into an official settlement.
The Russian foreign minister has strongly condemned the United States' foreign policy approach to other countries. Sergei Lavrov says the only method that the United States uses in its international relations is, quote, blackmail, threats, and sanctions. Lavrov made the remarks in a joint press conference with his Cuban counterpart, Bruno Rodriguez, in Havana during his tour of Latin America. He added that Washington has declared a crusade against Russia using Ukraine as the spearhead of the attack. Lavrov said during his tour he has discussed the necessity to oppose the US and West's attempts to dominate the world with his counterparts. He said Russia, along with Cuba and other countries, takes part in collective efforts to counter US policies. Lavrov's tour of Latin America has already taken him to Brazil, Venezuela, and Nicaragua. Meanwhile, Germany's defense minister has rejected a quick decision on Ukraine's NATO membership, saying it's not time to decide on the issue. Boris Pistorius said Ukraine's possible membership in NATO or the European Union will not be discussed at a meeting of Kiev's allies in Germany on Friday. He said that the decision on Ukraine's NATO membership could not be made just out of solidarity, and Kiev is aware of the decision-making situation. Ukraine has repeatedly asked to become a member of the military alliance. Pistorius's comments came after NATO's chief, Jens Stoltenberg, invited Ukraine into the alliance's summit in July. He said Kiev's membership bid will be high up on the summit's agenda. Moscow has repeatedly warned against Ukraine's NATO membership. It says preventing Kiev from joining the military alliance remains one of the objectives of the war. North Korea says its status as a nuclear power is irreversible and will remain an undeniable reality, even if the US and its allies deny it. North Korean Foreign Minister Cho Son-hwa made the remarks in reaction to a recent statement by the Group of Seven countries. She accused the G7 of interfering in her country's internal affairs. Cho said Pyongyang will continue legitimate action to eliminate military threats from the US and its allies. She said North Korea's development of nuclear weapons is only intended to guard it against US threats. Cho warned that North Korea will take strong action if the U.S. and its allies attempt to violate its sovereignty and interests. Her remarks came amid a simmering tension on the Korean Peninsula over joint military drills by the U.S. and its allies. Pyongyang has slammed those drills as a rehearsal for, quote, an all-out nuclear war. Now, high inflation and rising interest rates lead to a spike in business closures across the 27-nation EU. Critics blame sanctions against Russia, which have resulted in unbearably high energy production, transportation, and rental costs. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
It seems everywhere you look in Brussels, the EU's de facto capital, shops have closed down. The European Trade Union Confederation, ETUC, says business bankruptcies in the EU are at their highest since 2015. Sanctions against Russia over the war in Ukraine are ensuring inflation remains painfully high. Citizens say prices continue to rise.
Everything, food at the supermarket, clothes, traveling, airplane tickets.
If the war ends tomorrow, we will have like some years to adapt and to go back to the prices of before war.
It's very hard for young people to even stay in the EU anymore. It's a lot more enticing to, you know, move to Australia or, you know, Canada or somewhere else.
The ETUC warns the European Central Bank risks throwing the Eurozone into a deep recession through its policy of continuing to increase interest rates in an effort to control inflation. Trade unions say wages and working conditions in the EU are deteriorating at a time when the cost of living remains extremely high. They say millions are struggling to put food on the table, while food and energy companies make record profits as a result of price speculation. Another threat to the EU's economy relates to skills shortages. The European Commission has just launched yet another plan designed to overhaul the 27 nation blocs' education and training systems to meet the needs of this digital age.
Almost 3 in 4 businesses say that they do not find employees with enough digital skills. And that, of course, means that these businesses cannot invest, cannot grow.
But experts say high borrowing costs due to rising interest rates are the main factor stifling business growth right now. It's suggested failed Western efforts to try and punish Russia have backfired. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
That brings an end to world news for this hour. Thank you for staying with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
God's Month. In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Salam and welcome to another episode of this series. The end time is the period of seditions and catastrophes. Wicked forces have employed all their power to spread their dominance in the world and stabilize it everywhere. Satan and its agents are doing their best to drag more and more people into sin and transgression. This is while there is no prophet or infallible imam to show the right path and show the true aspect of everything. That's why we read in the last part of Dua Iftitah, which has been recommended by Imam Mahdi for the nights of Ramadan. O Allah, indeed we complain to you the loss of our prophet, our blessings upon him and his progeny, and the absence of our master. Whoever does not see his leader and cannot communicate with him will naturally be distraught and dismal. He will complain to God as the prophet has passed away and the last infallible imam is in occultation too. However, this complaint does not mean protesting, but it means taking refuge and entreating for mercy and favor in the middle of oppression and corruption dominating everywhere. There are many narrations on the seditions and tough conditions of the end time and how hard it is to keep one's faith. Imam Ali, peace upon him, says, I give you one example. A man has some wheat. He dusts it and cleans it from bitter and black seeds and saves it in a store. After a while, he notices that part of the wheat has been infected with pest. He cleans the pest and again saves the remaining wheat. He does it several times so that there remain hard seeds which are not affected by pest. In the end time too, people of feeble faith will be separated from those who stay firmly in their faith and religion and practicing it, and seditions will not harm them. The 15th fallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace upon him, was asked when Imam Mahdi will appear and rise up. He answered, when false testimonies are accepted, just witnesses are rejected, and people trivialize bloodshed, adultery, and usury. It seems that we live in an era in which many of these vices have materialized. This has made it very difficult to keep faith and religion. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, said, keeping religion in the end time is like holding fire or pressing a thorny bush in the hand. That is why we continue in the supplication, O Allah, we complain, the big number of our enemies and the small number of us and the intensity of seditions against us and the conditions of the time which are opposed to us. The Prophet has also said, Gabriel came to me and said, O Messenger of Allah, soon there will be sedition among your Ummah. I asked, how will be the exit from it? He said, the news of the predecessors and the posteriors and the edict of what happens between you has been mentioned. Allah's book is the divider of truth and falsehood, and it is not a jest. Any oppressor who does not practice it, Allah will annihilate him, and anyone who seeks guidance in other than that, Allah will mislead him. Allah's firm cord is the wise word and the right path. The only way of salvation from the misleading conditions of the end time is to cling to the two weighty things which the Prophet left behind, the Noble Quran and his Ahlul Bayt. They will never separate from each other till they arrive at the pond of Kauthar on the day of resurrection. Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, says, when Arqa'im rises up, it is obligatory on all to help each other. For sure, what is seen at the time of the universal movement of Imam Mahdi is friendship and cooperation. This goes to the extent that anyone who needs something can take it from his brother's pocket. But it is very important to keep oneself safe against polytheism and hypocrisy. That's why it has been stressed in Iftitah supplication to go through hardships and calamities in a way that we set the ground for the reappearance of Imam Mahdi. So we read, and bless Muhammad and his progeny, and help us with the victory that you have expedited. and a harm that you have removed, an assistance that you have made it mighty, and a dominance of truth that you have shown clearly, and a mercy from you that glorifies us, and a health from you that clothes us with your mercy, O most merciful of the merciful.
Food for thought.
Salam, friends, and how about contemplation upon words of wisdom as taught to us by Barometer of Faith, Imam Ali, peace upon him. How strange is this man? He becomes happy when he gains that which would never miss him, and becomes sad when he misses that which he would never catch. Had he thought, he would have realized that everything is planned and his earnings are predestined. He would have also sufficed with the available and would not have gone into the hard.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is A to Z. An introduction to an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the importance of giving thanks. In the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful, may his peace and blessings be upon Muhammad and his pure, immaculate family. Salamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. You are listening to A to Z, an Islamic lifestyle. I'm Farhad, your host, and we are here together to learn more about Ramadan. So what are the points we should always pay attention to, especially during the holy month of Ramadan, is remembering God's blessings. One of the most important blessings of God is the health of the body, because the body is a vehicle on which the soul rides to achieve divine goals. And generally, a person deprived of the blessings of health can hardly participate in the worship of God. So, if we can fast during the month of Ramadan, we should thank God for the blessing of health. Gratitude from God's blessing is indeed the most important key to happiness. This is because when we remember God's blessing and see them in our lives, hope arises in our hearts. Moreover, gratitude from God's blessings attracts further blessings. As the Prophet ﷺ said, God's blessings are fleeting, like wild animals running away, so bend them with gratitude. To be grateful for God's blessings, we must remember them. Consequently, paying attention to the blessings that God has given us is the best way to thank God, provided it has got a condition, and that is we should know and we have always remembered that the source of these blessings is God's mercy and grace. This way of thinking about things makes people happy and prevents them from feeling depressed. So, for the very first step of giving thanks to God because of his blessings is to remembering them and try to count his blessings, his divine blessings in our life with ourselves. And we can talk about the blessings we have, about the good family we have, about good children we have, about the spiritual life we have. They are very great blessings. And if we're remembering them and try to remind ourselves about these blessings, this is the first step of giving thanks to God the Almighty.
رمضان المستبين جاء بالنور المبين رمضان 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 القانتين.
Welcome back, my dear brothers and sisters. You are listening to A to Z on Islamic Life and Style. I am Farhad, your host. So in the previous part, we talked about how important it is to remember the blessings of God because that awakens hope in people's hearts. So by remembering God's blessings, we can awaken hope in our heart. On the other hand, a man will lose all that he has if he does not remember and appreciate God's benefits. For the devil will expose his weaknesses and faults and make him feel regret and depression in his heart. So, as I said in the previous part, by remembering God's blessing, we can protect our heart from feeling regret, from feeling depression. But if we forget them, the Satan will expose our heart through our weaknesses and faults, and we will always remember our weaknesses and faults with ourselves, and that makes us feel regret and depression. In this case, man sees no benefit in doing good and begins to heal this pain with worldly pleasures, and because he despairs of God's mercy, he will not renounce any single sin. And he opens his eyes when everything is over. It is very important not to allow the devil to sow the seeds of despair in our hearts by forgetting God's blessings so that he can drag us along and deprive us from the God's mercy. So, I hope everyone to stay safe from the temptations of the Satan. Thank you for listening to us, and I hope a very good time and a pleasure time in the Ramadan month.
Forgive me for everything I've done in the past, when everything was going so fast, and now I just can't go on.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir. Our email is english@irib.ir.
What hurts me most is my son. When we found my daughter, she was already burnt. They covered her with a cloth and moved her to the hospital. But my son, I kept watching him while he was burning and suffering for 3 minutes. He was dying in front of my eyes. I couldn't reach him. As a father, it was very painful looking at him, helpless to rescue my own flesh and blood, my only son. We found my brother and his family dead. in the same place they slept. We found them all dead, choked from the smoke in their bedrooms, without any sort of resistance or attempts to get out. But their whole bodies were charred. My brother with his wife and the four children. Hazem died with his children. Mahmoud, the 8-year-old son. Nabil, the 7-year-old. Farah, the 4-year-old daughter. And Kamer, the 7-month-old baby. All we can say is, God bless their souls. I slept after having a sedative shot in the hospital. When I woke up, my family told me that my only son died and my daughter was in the hospital suffering from third-degree burns. After the funeral, I went to check on my daughter's health. She was living only through medical equipment. I was shocked at what I saw. When I left the hospital, I got a phone call telling me that my daughter had passed away. I called my uncles to resume the funeral again after we closed it just the night before. Both of my children died. We asked God to give us patience and more children. Hazem was the only one among my sons asking about me and taking care of me. He had always been a giver.
Fateh al-Baghdadi is the victim number 110, and his sister is number 111, who were among burned people. Hazem Adher, his wife, and his four children raised the number of victims to 116. This is the total number of victims who were burned to death either from candles or by backup electrical generators from 2007 to March 2013.
No candles anymore, God forbid. We will never use candles again. We've had enough. A whole family died because of those candles. I only had Fatih and Tala, mercy on their souls, who burned to death. As a result of fear, now I cannot have babies anymore.
وهذا ما تم بالفعل هناك حرق العديد من الأطفال هناك حرق العديد من
This is what's really happened. A lot of the casualties were children and their parents who burnt to death. But recently, the education branch within the Ministry of Health began awareness sessions to educate citizens on how these generators and candles can be unsafe, especially when used incorrectly.
Umhan al-Tantawi, a neighbor to Abdel Fattah al-Baghdadi, owns a small shop selling chickens in Barish camp. This woman is using a generator to provide electricity to keep working in the shop that she depends on to make a living, and also using candles despite of the pain and damage it caused to her neighbors.
A few days ago, my son Ahmed lit a candle. I found it completely burnt in the bathroom. It almost burnt the house. From that moment, I didn't use candles for light anymore. Electricity affects us so much. My husband's sick. He has blood pressure, heart disease, diabetes, and kidney problems. When the electricity is off, his health gets bad. We even don't have the fuel for a generator.
After we finished shooting in Omhani's house in Burej camp, the driver was unable to drive us to another place to continue our work because of the fuel shortage.
Can we go to shoot another place? No, we can't get there. I do not have enough petrol to go. We only have 30 minutes to reach one place. I think there is a petrol station near here. I hope we can get enough petrol.
Hundreds of car drivers wait hours and hours in front of petrol stations to refill their cars with fuel.
We have suffered from the petrol crisis and shortage for about 7 years. The tunnels help somewhat in providing the diesel and petrol, but after the tunnels close, we have suffered again for about 6 months now.
The petrol crisis is affecting every one of us. We need to go get the fuel like our husbands when they travel. We must take this role in standing in a long line waiting for some fuel. We usually return late to our children. We hope this crisis ends soon because we have had enough suffering.
As a result of the electricity outage, hospitals and clinics that rely extensively on the use of backup generators were not away from the crisis as well, due to the unpredictable shortage of power supply.
As a result of the Israeli blockade and electricity cuts, hospitals and clinics rely extensively on backup generators, which are not designed to function for prolonged periods and are often damaged as a result. Additionally, the fuel needed to generate electricity is frequently unavailable. Medics and doctors groups express their utmost concerns about the dangerous situation of the health sector in Gaza. This acute crisis of electricity and shortage of medical supplies endangers the lives of all patients, children and adults.
The shortage of industrial fuel that's used to generate electricity has also affected the operating capacity of the Gaza power plant.
The problem now in the power station is the lack of regularity, awaiting the arrival of fuel because of border conditions, security, and Israeli policies. Therefore, in this matter, as long as the occupation has the ability to control it, I think they will keep a certain level of control to keep us within the walls of the energy and power crisis.
Thus, the Israeli occupation, who restricts fuel supply to Gaza, is responsible for the innocents who were burned to death. In addition, to the patients who have been suffering in hospitals. Moreover, the power cuts are also a major threat to the industrial sector, where the production is interrupted and leads to an increase in poverty and unemployment rates among Gazans.
When the electricity cuts, especially in certain seasons, it affects not only the factory's production, but also affects 17 workers by reducing their salaries due to the reduced working hours. This will badly damage the economic situation. Israel continues restricting the fuel supply to Gaza, which makes the power station stop generating electricity. But despite all of that, we must survive to free our lands. As tailors, we are paid for working 8 hours a day. When the hours are reduced due to the electricity cutting, the payment is also reduced. Lower salaries mean suffering in all aspects of our lives.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Germany's Verdi trade union has called on workers in the security areas at Düsseldorf, Cologne and Hamburg airports to walk off their jobs on Thursday and Friday, 20th and 21st of April. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. German national broadcaster Deutsche Welle has covered this story and tells us more. The German trade union Verdi called for all-day warning strikes on Thursday and Friday, 20th and 21st of April, for employees in several areas of Düsseldorf, Hamburg and Cologne, Bonn airports. The strike begins on the night from Wednesday to Thursday and ends on the night from Friday to Saturday, Verdi said on Tuesday. The sectors to be affected include the aviation security area, passenger control, personnel and goods control and service areas. Longer waiting times or even flight cancellations are to be expected due to the strike, the trade union warned. Hamburg Airport said all departures would be cancelled or take place without passengers on Thursday and Friday due to a strike, with around 80,000 passengers likely to be affected. Arrivals will still be possible, it added. The reason for the strikes are negotiations between the union Verdi and the Federal Association of Aviation Security Companies, BDLS, on time bonuses for night shifts, Saturdays, Sundays, and work on public holidays. Workers are also fighting for a better collective agreement on overtime pay for security and service staff at commercial airports in Germany. Despite the recent strikes, there has been no breakthrough so far. A written offer by the Federal Association of Aviation Security Companies, BDLS, was insufficient, the union stressed. Work at airports must become more attractive in order to be able to keep aviation security specialists and recruit new ones in order to avoid longer waiting times for holidaymakers, Verdi representative Wolfgang Piper said. We call on the BDLS to finally present a negotiable offer in the negotiations on 27th and 28th of April in order to avoid further strikes and to end the conflict before Pentecost, he added. Warning strike at Deutsche Bahn is planned for Friday, 21st of April. Meanwhile, German media reported that further warning strikes were also planned at Deutsche Bahn and other railway companies in the next few days. An exact date is not yet known, but according to media reports, there was talk of a strike this Friday, 21st of April. The Railway and Transport Union, EVG, wants to announce this Wednesday how it will proceed in the wage dispute with Deutsche Bahn and around 50 other companies. At the end of March, the union, together with the Verdi Services Union, called for a major strike nationwide, which affected airports and ports in Germany, in addition to buses and trains. Turkey's Anadolu news agency has also covered this story and tells us more. A German union on Tuesday announced that it will launch a strike at several airports on Thursday and Friday, 20th and 21st of April, amid an ongoing dispute over pay and working conditions. In a statement on its website, the Verdi union said the 48-hour strike of security staff at Dusseldorf, Hamburg and Cologne Bonn airports will begin in the early hours of Thursday morning and continue until midnight on Friday. Passengers were warned of possible flight cancellations, delays and longer waiting times at these airports. The union is demanding an increase to overtime pay and surcharges for work on weekends, public holidays and during night shifts. The latest round of negotiations between the union and the Federal Association of Aviation Security Companies, BDLS, ended without an agreement last week. We call on BDLS to finally present a negotiable offer during the negotiations on 27th and 28th of April in order to avoid further strikes, Verdi's representative Wolfgang Piper stressed. The Reuters news agency has also covered this story. Two German labor unions representing transport workers called for mass strikes that are expected to cause widespread disruption on railways and airports in Germany and cause travel chaos throughout the country. The strikes are prompted by wage disputes. The strikes, scheduled to start just after midnight on Thursday night and affect services throughout Germany, will be the latest in months of industrial action and protest that have hit major European economies as higher food and energy prices hit living standards. The Verdi Union is negotiating on behalf of around 2.5 million employees in the public sector, including in public transport and at airports. Railway and Transport Union, EVG, negotiates for around 230,000 employees at Deutsche Bahn and various bus companies. Verdi is demanding a 10.5% wage increase, with pay rising by at least €500 per month, while EVG is asking for a 12% pay rise or at least €650 more per month. We represent groups of workers who literally run this country and are paid far too badly to do so, Verdi's chairman Frank Wernicke said. Deutsche Bahn and other public employers are offering around a 5% wage increase on average, along with a one-off payment of up to €2,500, generally below inflation, which was 6.9% in 2022, and is expected to slightly ease to 6.6% this year. We don't want any further escalation. We want a negotiable offer, said Martin Burkert, the chairman of the EVG Union, which represents workers at 50 transport companies, including railway operator Deutsche Bahn.
In history. Memories are sweet and heartwarming, but they also bring along the regrets of loss. People usually visit relics to alleviate this feeling. They visit the old neighborhoods, people, and houses that are full of memories. But reviewing the past torments my family, my compatriots, and me. Not only can we not go back in time, but we can't go back to where our past was formed. All that is left for us are movies that open our old wounds. Our house was lost in history, and right in front of people's eyes. I am Edward Said. I was born in 1935 into a Christian family in this house. My father was a successful merchant who imported stationery from Egypt.
Not only the eldest, but he was also the only boy in the family. So I think we thought of him, his sisters, a bit as he was getting a good deal, as they say.
I was 10 or 11 years old when I little by little realized the presence of Jewish immigrants in the city. Our city was experiencing a chaotic situation in those days. Our house was not far from King David Hotel, so I was terrified when that King David Hotel bombing happened.
Jewish terrorists bombed the King David Hotel in 1946. The wreckage could be seen from our house. I recall the rising sense of danger, British soldiers on the alert, and news of impending war between Palestinians and Jewish forces.
A year later, we went to Cairo with all our relatives and family members because the situation became too difficult. That was a one-way trip with no return date.
Most of my family left Jerusalem because they had to. Our house was in an area that was totally unprotected, and it was in an area that fell to the Haganah in, I think, February of 1948. There was, to my recollection, there was no militia. There was no organized resistance of any sort. By the time the fighting began in the latter part of 1947, it became impossible to live there. And there was a general sense of panic. And my family left at the end of December of 47.
In Cairo, my father sent me to an English language school, and I found my interests in literature. My father was a wealthy man with aristocratic morals. He was proud of his U.S. passport and asked everyone to call him William. He was very organized and cared so much about discipline.
In relation to me, he was very severe. I had four sisters. He was much more partial to my sisters. And for him, I was constantly to be reformed. And in many ways, he focused on certain parts of my body. For example, my back. He was very upset at the fact that I didn't have a military posture.